Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
This episode is kindly sponsored by Ren Clean Skincare. Now, it's not always easy to find skincare brands that tick the right boxes without compromising on efficacy. But this is where Ren really come through. All of their products are cruelty-free and they're on track to be zero waste by the end of 2021 by using recycled, recyclable, or reusable materials. I'm going to tell you about a few of my favorite products, but you should know that it was extremely hard for me to just choose two. I'm in love with their Ready Steady Glow Daily AHA Tonic, which I use each morning as a toner after cleansing. I find it really brightens and energizes my complexion without leaving that feeling of tightness or dryness. And the product I use for the final step of my morning skincare routine is their best-selling Clean Screen Mattifying Mineral SPF 30. This offers UVA, UVB, and blue light protection. Both of these products are vegan, cruelty-free, and made from recycled plastic. Stay tuned as I'll be sharing lots more about Ren in the coming months. And be sure to head over to their Instagram at Ren Skincare to learn more about their zero waste pledge, as they are the first premium beauty brand to meet this goal. Hello, Venetia here, and welcome back to the show. This week, I am chatting to Charlie Craggs. Charlie is an award-winning author, activist, and speaker, hailed by Vogue as the voice of a community. Charlie is the author of To My Trans Sisters, an inspirational collection of letters written by successful trans women, sharing the lessons they learnt on their journeys to womanhood, celebrating their achievements, and empowering the next generation to become who they truly are. She's also the founder of Nail Transphobia, a conversation-focused national campaign that tackles transphobia through education, empowerment, and nail art. This year is a big year for Charlie, as she will be presenting a BBC documentary about trans youth. We discussed this in the episode, as well as the media's misrepresentation of the trans community. I first came across Charlie on Instagram at Charlie_Craggs, and she quickly became one of my favourite people to follow. So do check out the episode notes to follow and support her work. Now, a small content warning, there are a few mentions of suicide in this episode. So if you don't have the capacity for that at the moment, please do pick another episode from this season. If you do stick with us, it's a really powerful episode, and I just feel so grateful for Charlie. She's so honest and open with us, and I really hope you enjoy it. Without further ado, here is the super charming Charlie Craggs on All the Small Things. Charlie, you're my first in-person interview in over a year.
Oh my God, that is such a compliment.
I'm so happy that
I'm sorry that you're going to be so underwhelmed.
I won't be. I know I won't be, because every interview I've ever seen you do, you've been absolutely incredible. So
thank you, babe.
I know I won't be. But let us start as we always do. I would love to hear about whether or not you have any kind of morning routine, if there are any kind of habits that you'd like to commit to first thing. How do we wake up with Charlie Craggs?
Chaos. We wake up every morning and choose violence, which is what, but that's actually what I'm, this is why I wanted to come on, because I'm like, I'm learning to not like, my habits, I can just hear Pippin outside. That's what I wake up to every morning, living on a busy bread. I'm just like, I'm learning that the habits I have are bad habits, which is a start. Like I can at least learn from there. And I've just come to that recently where I just like realized I go on my phone literally straight away, because obviously you wake up via your alarm on your phone, or at least I do via the alarm on my phone. So then you turn your alarm off, but then like straight away, the first thing you see is emails, text messages, WhatsApps, Instagram, DMs, Twitter. And I'm like, and I just naturally just straight away go into it, especially if they look important. I'm like, oh, or even if they look exciting, I'm like, oh. And then I'm like, it can just really, like if it's stressful, it can set your day off on a stressful note. If it's like negative, if it's like a news on Twitter or something, it can set your day off on a bad note. Like, I just realized this isn't good for, like, whether it's good or bad news, or like, it's just, I need to like Why am I starting my day at 0 to 100? Like, I literally wake up and I'm at 100 straight away because I'm like switched on. Like, I should like wean myself into it. I should like stretch. Like, you know, like, what's that thing? What's that thing that dogs do? Sun salutations, you know, like things like that. Just like, just have a stretch, have a breath of fresh air out the window into my lovely busy road. Have a cup of tea. Have like, do you mean like just sit down, even just like put on the TV or something, just like, or the radio, just like not go from I just realized that is such a bad habit I have, but it's good that I've recognized that now.
100%. And you know what? I think it's much easier said than done. Yeah. Like, I would love to have this set routine every morning where I am just zen central. Please.
I know you have a set routine. Look, you are a Virgo. I guess you were a Virgo. Do you remember the other day? Like, I asked you. I was like, I bet you anyone you're a Virgo. And Virgos have routines. Don't try and tell me you don't have a routine.
I have an ideal routine that I would love to do every day. But Charlie, like, the reality
whatever.
Especially recently, like, I'm lying in bed for like a good half hour, 45 minutes, just like staring into space thinking, why am I getting up today?
I think that's actually better than what I'm doing though, because I wake up and I jump out of bed. I'm like, crap, crap, crap. I don't know if I can swear. I was going to say the S word. Shit! I'm like, shit, shit, shit. I've got like 1,000 emails, because I'm like, I often go to bed really late as well, which is another bad habit. And that sets me up for a bad morning, if that makes sense, because I wake up and I'm not fully replenished. Like, I've not had the best sleep. Like, so I'll probably go to bed most nights around like 3-ish, like sometimes like a bit earlier, like 2, sometimes 4, sometimes 5. But like, I just find I work well at night. And I think that's probably out of like anxiety that I put things off in the daytime. And then I get them all done at night really quickly, but it's because I have to get them done. So I wake up and I'm like, oh God, I have to like, I don't know, like, because I've woken up at 10 rather than like most people get up at like 8 or something. And I'm like, I've woken up at 11 or 10 or something.
But I think it is a thing. Like, I think some people are kind of wired to be more creative at night.
Yeah, I do hear that a lot of, I'm creative. Like, I find a lot of my creative friends stay up late and work. But I did also hear once, and I was like, that's what it is. Like, I've always told myself it's because I'm creative, but it's to do with anxiety. And it's also to do with like, I heard it's something that the Chinese do where it's like, because they work so much in the daytime, some of them will stay up gaming like all night because it's like the only free time you have, so you don't want to waste it sleeping. I read something about this recently. I can't remember where I read it, but I was like, that's kind of true. I'm like, it's like, I remember being like a 16-year-old and like really enjoying feeling like naughty, like staying up on MSN to like 3 a.m. talking to my friends. And I'm like, this is so fun. Like, and now I'm like, I'm still going to bed at 3 a.m. because I still have such bad habits then. So it's so funny that we're talking about habits now. But I just need to, I think, get some better habits for myself.
I think if I've learned anything, it's about, not that you have asked for my advice, and I am like definitely not a picture perfect when it comes to this, but I think like making one small achievable change. Mm. So like, for example, a really good one could you have an old school alarm clock in your bedroom so that you wake up to that, yeah, and waking up to your phone?
That's a good idea. And I hate the noise of the phone alarm as well.
Oh, it gives me like major anxiety.
It's the most hot. And I have it on like the standard one where it's like, and it's like the horrible iPhone one. And I'm like, why do they even have that as a choice? But also, why is that the standard? And also, why have I not, after years, changed it? Like, I'm just not a Virgo. I'm a Pisces. And I just let things happen. I just let this chaos happen. And then I'm like, why is my life chaos? And it's because I don't make any small changes because I'm not a Virgo. I'm just like a very Pisces energy, just like absolute chaos.
Tell me, are you fueled at all by caffeine, or is it all your own energy?
Yes, it's not always caffeine. So I've noticed that caffeine makes me sad. I don't know if this is a thing. And then I posted about it and a lot of my followers were like, yeah, this is a thing. Like, and I Googled it and other people have said it. There's been a few studies, but it's not like, I'm not telling people not to drink caffeine, but like I'm someone who's always struggled with my mental health since I was like early teens. And I just noticed that sometimes when I'm drinking coffee, I just get really, I hit a sadness after like a couple of hours. I just hit a really deep sadness where I just have to stop working. I've drank the coffee to work and now I'm going to be up all night, and now I'm feeling sad because of the coffee. So I'm going to be up all night feeling sad. My habits in the morning are going to be even worse. Like, it's just like, it's like chaos upon chaos. Like, I just like, yeah. So I'm trying to drink less coffee. Although I've heard even that there's like just as per gram or something, there's more caffeine in tea sometimes than in coffee. Or so I've read that recently. So I'm like, I drink tea all the time. So like, I don't know.
We're both drinking tea right now. So I think it will be interesting to talk more about kind of your life as we go into this interview, because people will realize that in amongst all the chaos, you are doing amazing things if they are not already familiar with those things. So I would love to wind back the clock a little bit and talk about growing up and your time growing up in the noughties. I know you've spoken in the past about your only role model you had being Nadia from Big yes. Brother, and then eventually Laverne Cox, but that wasn't until a decade later.
Yeah, yeah.
So talk to me a little bit about your life growing up and also the kind of people you had to look up to.
So I'm from Ladbroke Grove, originally born and bred, just moved away actually because I can't afford to live there anymore. But like, I wouldn't want to be from anywhere else. Like, I'm really proud of where I'm from, but it was also very hard. So I'm a council estate girl, so it was very like, council estates are quite hard for boys, in and this goes for obviously feminine boys like how I was growing up, but also for like my brothers who are just both straight cis boys, is they can be very like damaging, and I think that's where a lot of it's just boys are expected to be men before they're men. Like, boys are like 12 and having to be men or even younger than that, and like just yeah, just like gang culture, drugs, even sex, stuff like that. It's too much too soon. It's very negative, and like the impact on boys who aren't like the regular boys. So like, I'm, for anyone listening, I haven't even said, but obviously I'm trans, maybe it's not obvious, but yeah, I'm trans. And like, growing up, I would never said I was gay, but it was just I obviously looking back, I was so textbook trans, but it just wasn't a part of cultural conversation back then. But I was like, I was saying I was a girl, but also I was like dressed, I'd dress up like a girl, like if we were playing dress up, all my friends were always girls. I'd play with the girls' toys. Once I was a teenager, I'd wear makeup and stuff. Like, I was very much obviously trans, but people read me as gay, and I was told, you're gay, you're a perf, you're all these words. And it was just really hard. And yeah, like I said, the first time I even saw a trans person was like when I was like 10 or 11. That's the first time I even knew what trans was. So I'd been saying I was a girl to my mum, like, oh, I wish I was a girl. I remember I'm Catholic, so I'd go to bed and pray that I'd wake up a girl. And like, but even though I was saying that and it was so obvious I was trans, I didn't know why I was trans because I didn't have a word for it, and I didn't have a person to look at and be like, oh, that's what I am. And when I saw Nardo, my brother, in 2005 or six, I was like, I just straight away, it resonated with me. And I'm like, oh my God, you can do that. Like, I literally couldn't get my head around that. There's someone who felt like how I felt and that did what I wanted to do. And then, yeah, it's quite sad because then there was a gap for maybe like 10 years where if you try and name another famous person after Nadia from 2005, like Laverne came around 2015, 14, 13, that sort of time. Like, if you try and name a famous trans person in that time, you just can't. Like, there's no one. Like, the only time you'd see trans people would be on like Jerry Springer when we were being like beaten up on stage and laughed at in That's a Man segments, or like if we were like being played by like a cis actor, like a guy on like CSI, new whatever those programs are called, you know, like murder programs, where we'd be like a prostitute played by a man in a wig, and it's like, fucking hell, like, is this all? So no wonder, and that was part of the reason why I suppressed myself and suppressed my femininity and suppressed my transness, because I didn't want to be this. I was like, if that's my only choice, I'm like, I don't want to be that. I'd rather be unhappy and be in the wrong body than be even more unhappy in the right body. But then after a while, I just realized I wasn't living. So I had to transition.
Thank you so much for being so open.
No, it's okay.
With me. I feel like I really that went
from
like,
this is what I'm saying about my stories. I go from absolute like screaming and shouting to like crying the next minute. It's very water sign energy. I'm just like a messy water sign.
Well, I really do appreciate your openness. And it just makes me think about how obviously important representation is for young people in particular, and I know this has been like the kind of forefront of your work, and it makes me think a lot about how important social media must be for young trans people.
Oh my God.
And how important it is for them to have that access. How different do you think things would have been if you had had people like you to follow on social media?
It has changed the game. Like, in even if you think about it, aside from transness, like if you look at teenagers today, they don't have the ugly phase that we had because they have things like Instagram where they're like, and YouTube where they learn how to do their makeup, and they just come out the womb knowing how to look good, and they're stylish at 13 and they like know how to do like cut creases, and like we were like I speak for myself, I don't know about you, but we were like putting like with our fingers in there, like wearing blue eyeshadow up to our eyebrows and like thinking we were cute. And baby, I transitioned at 2021. I walked out of my house at 2021 learning my makeup like that. I was, oh my Lord, like that, because when I was, that was just before like the kind of Instagram took off. So like, I didn't even have it then at the start of my transition, never mind in my teenage years or childhood. So like, just if you, like I said, how can you be what you can't see? How can you know you're trans if you don't even know being trans exists? I literally did not know that you could be trans. So how could I be trans? I just knew I felt like a girl. I was saying, it was so obvious. It's like, hello. But like, my obviously, it just wasn't part of our cultural conversation, and especially not on council estates. And like, my mum and my dad are really accepting. My friends are all really accepting, but just like, it just, no one knew because it just wasn't talked about. And it's just so important that things are talked about. It's maddening to me that there's been like a kickback lately with like talk about like not exposing kids to like trans stuff and gender stuff, and oh, you're making kids trans by like talking about trans. And it's like, no, like, you can't make the whole point is that you can't make anyone trans. Also, no one would in their right mind would choose to be trans. Why would you choose this life? Like, why would you choose in the social sense, but also the physical sense, like the amount of, never mind the social pain you go through, just like being constant abuse in the street. Even now, 7 years into my transition, I'm just like constantly getting shit in the street, but also just like, and risking your family chucking you out, risking never finding love because it's really hard as a trans person. Even things like jobs become harder, healthcare gets harder, but even the physical side of like the actual pain, but also like the money it takes to transition. I don't know, the Daily Mail are lying to you. Like, it's not all like taxpayers' money. Like, everything, the only, like, everything pretty much, the only thing that gets covered is downstairs. And most people, like, I don't want that. Like, so I've paid about 40K. I'm a council estate girl. Where is 40K coming from? Where is it coming from? Money aside, surgeries aside, like, forget about the details. How, just imagine trying to like fix a body that's wrong. It's so expensive. Like, why would anyone choose? Why would you put yourself through that? Like, for fun? Like, just blows my mind that there's been this massive kickback lately. And I just never thought I'd see this, because you just, yeah, just coming from where we came from, and then where we got to a point where everything was going really good, but around the time that Laverne kind of blew up and everything was changing, and then all of a sudden there's been like a decline where it's just like a lot of like backlash. And I think that just comes naturally with when there's times of progression, there's always like a wave of kickback as well that follows.
I really appreciate your honesty and openness about the amount of money that you've spent, like, because I don't think that's, and I know I've seen you talk about this on your Instagram stories too, like, that is a lot of money.
Yeah,
and I don't think people realize that. I would love to talk about your new documentary for the BBC.
Yay.
Which sounds so amazing and very balanced.
Thank you, babe.
It's called DIY Trans Teens.
Actually, it's got a new name now. Like, so I haven't told anyone this yet, but like, they changed the name last minute. I actually didn't like the name DIY Trans Teens. I had no say. So I am just the presenter in this. So I don't get a say on like the name or the narrative. But it's been changed to a more like palatable, because I was like, DIY, like, that's a bit sensationalized. It sounds like kids are like doing that, like literally cutting into them, I don't know, you know, like hammers and stuff.
Yeah.
I just sounded a bit like sensationalized, and then I think they took it on board and they've changed it to, I didn't ask for this, but transitioning teen. So it's much more like, that's what it says on the tin, basically. And it's like, okay, that's fine with me. Like, I was fine with that one, but this is probably a bit safer, and like, it was going to get less flack because the flack has started.
So yeah, tell me about it, and like, how the experience has been for you, how it feels to be presenting a documentary, and like, tell us what we can expect from it as well.
So it is basically, so like I said, I'm just presenting, so it's not my story or anything. It's the story of teenagers, so like, it's mostly people around like 16 to 18 who are trans and who are in the process of transitioning, and they're like the struggles that come with it, and the talk, because basically there's it's basically breaking down a lot of the misconceptions in the media right now around this, because there's so much talk around trans teenagers and trans children, and there's talk about like how they're being rushed through surgeries. Even there's front page headlines of national newspapers with like pictures of toddlers with their head in their hands saying kids as young as 4 being sent to sex change clinics, 50 kids a week, literally you can look these up yourself, 50 kids a week being sent to sex change clinics. And it's like, first of all, you have to be 18 in this country to have surgery. They've also made it you can't be below 16 to be even given access to things like hormones and hormone blockers. But also, you have to wait like at least like 3 to 5 years to get a first appointment to discuss any of these things. Like, and surgeries are even further down the line. But even to get on hormones, it's like at least, I'd say, like 5 years minimum to get even to have a taste of a hormone. So it just blows my mind that they're never, I'm morally allowed to post these things front page, but every week there's a new headline, and just legally I don't understand how it's allowed, because it's just so wrong. And my documentary just unpacks this and meets the teenagers who the everyone is talking about right now, who no one, because all these people write, like, so the Times, for example, posted last year 324 articles about trans stuff, all negative, and not a single one it was included a trans person's voice or was by a trans person or even consulted with a trans person. It was all just like, should trans children be having sex changes? Should trans women be in women's toilets? And there's so much talk about it, but these people have never met these, first of all, these people don't even have trans kids, so I don't understand why they're so invested in something that doesn't affect them. Trans people are 1% of the population. Second of all, they don't even know trans people, I'm sure. Why do you care? Like, I just can't get my head around why these people are so angry. And I'm like, what have these trans teenagers or even trans people period done to annoy? Like, we've done nothing. Like, so I'm basically meeting the people that these people are just so obsessed with and talking about to hear the actual story, because you just don't, we're not brought into the conversation. We're talked about, but we're not like talked with, and we're not brought into the conversation. So it's putting a spotlight on these teenagers who are struggling, because contrary to the talk in the media where it's like, oh, kids go to the GP on Tuesday and by Wednesday they've had got a vagina at 3. And it's like, no, actually, realistically, you go to your GP, you tell your mum you're trans when you're like a teenager, like 13, 14. Your mum only takes it seriously maybe after like 2 years. I mean, she's not going to rush you to the GP after you've said it one time. She's going to make sure it's a serious. You'd be very, also, I just, what blows my mind is that it's like, you have to be so lucky to have a parent who would even take you to a GP. If you're like, I'm very accepting parents. My parents didn't take me to a GP. Like, most parents would just like let you get to like 18 and then decide for yourself, sort of thing. But anyway, so you'd go to your GP after maybe a couple of years if you're lucky. And then after that, like I said, it's 3 to 5 years, and these kids, these teenagers that I'm meeting, are in that process of like waiting for that long. And what they're doing in the meantime, whether it's buying hormones off the internet because they're so desperate to start their transition that they'll like buy off black market websites, and they don't know what they're taking, and the side effects are just insane. I'm meeting these like 18-year-olds, and I'm thinking of myself when I was 18, and I'm just like, it's just so sad to me that there's no like, they just don't, the GPs just don't care. The NHS just doesn't care. They're not even going to like help them with like blood tests. They're just like, they have to turn a blind eye because they know it's happening, but they don't want to like, they can't help. They're actually legally not even allowed to help. So it's like, these kids are just out here popping black market hormones or like having to do crowdfunders. Like, I did a crowdfunder for my second round of surgery, which I had just before lockdown. And like, how at 18, like I said, how are you going to raise 840K or like even like 20K? Like, It just blows my mind. So I just basically just travel around the country meeting these teenagers just to hopefully change the narrative a bit and just bring some sense to the narrative and just bring some truth to the narrative. Yeah. Sorry, that was a long rant. Sorry.
No, but it's also important. It sounds like an amazing documentary. It sounds so important. Like, we need to be talking to trans people about trans issues that affect them rather than anyone else.
I just think that's the same with everything, is you don't talk about communities, you talk with communities, whether it's about race, even about gender. Like, you just wouldn't have 324 articles. That's almost one a day. Like, and not, and imagine that was just about men debating should women be allowed abortions. Every, you'd just be pissed. You'd be like, why is this allowed in a main, like in a, one of the biggest newspapers in this country? It just shouldn't be allowed, like, to people not talking with us but talking about us.
100%. And also, it just makes me think about, you know, we're supposed to be a country and a nation that cares about health and mental health, right? And if we're putting teenagers in a position where they have to buy drugs on, you know, illegal websites, or, you know, substances that potentially haven't even been signed off by health professionals.
Yeah.
What does that say about our nation caring about people's health and mental health?
Yeah. And also, trans people are waiting, like I said, 3 to 5 years. And this is on the web. Like, they've even published an apology recently saying, we're just like so ashamed that this is the wait. And it's not the staff on the ground who are the problem. Obviously, the doctors and most doctors and nurses are doing the best they can, but it's like the people who give funding to the departments and stuff. There's just no funding in this sector. And it's something like you should only wait like 8 weeks to see a specialist, that say it's to do with like anything. So it could be to do with your like your heart, cancer, anything. And yet trans people are waiting 3 to 5 years. Like, no one else is expected to wait 3 to 5 years. And there's even like, I obviously, for BBC, it has to be neutral and balanced and it can't be biased. So I had to like include stuff I didn't even want to include necessarily. I think it's important that I covered it because no one can throw at me like, you didn't talk about this though, and I did talk about it. So for example, I talked to a detransitioner and actually we come to the same conclusion, like, which is really nice. But for example, I have doctors in the documentary who will be like, you just don't see any other person in society waiting this long for a first appointment. So like, think of all the people who are going to not even make it to a first appointment because they're so suicidal, like I was. Like, you just think of how many people we've lost in that 3 to 5 year wait who just couldn't hack the wait.
Hold up. A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, marketers. Want a matchmaker to set you up with your perfect audience? Well, look no further. Get intimate right away with host-read sponsorships with Acast. Use Acast's self-serve ad platform to search and partner up with a podcaster or two from our network of more than 100,000 shows. Have them sing your praises in their own words. And get their listeners ready to be wooed into loyal customers. It's the ultimate loving endorsement. Book host-read sponsorships with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.
I think what's really clear about it is, and something that's very clear about your work, is how important it is to humanize all of these issues and like make sure that people aren't just speaking about your community, but they're speaking with your community, which leads me quite nicely on to talking about one of your amazing massive achievements, Nail Transphobia, which you started in 2013. It's just such an incredible idea. When I heard you talking about it in an interview, I cried because I don't want to like, I just thought it was so powerful what you said when I heard you talking about it. So can you tell our listeners about it and your kind of the incentive behind it as
well? Of course, yeah. So Nail Transphobia, like you said, I've been running for 7 years now. And it's basically a campaign I run where I travel around the country with a pop-up nail salon and a squad of trans nail techs. And we offer the public free manicures for the chance to have a chat with a trans person. So while people are getting their nails done, they can kind of ask us questions about trans stuff, or we can just have a chat. But the point is that you get to meet a trans person, because most people haven't. And that's where transphobia comes from, because, you know, like any type of bigotry just comes from like ignorance and misunderstanding and just like lack of education. And just like, if you met someone from the community that you were like being bigoted towards, you'd probably realize, oh, like, most of the things I'm thinking aren't even true, but also like we have a lot more in common than we do different, sort of thing. So it's just a chance for a conversation, and the nails are just a catalyst for that conversation. I've always just felt there's so much power in, it's very obvious, but there's just so much power in conversation. And the nail, I couldn't care less about nails. Like, literally, my nails aren't done now. I care about changing people's hearts and minds, and conversation is the key to that. Like, I could sit at a, like, because I do a lot of festivals, I do universities, I do like events and brand things and exciting things like that. But like, if I was to sit with a table full of brochures about transphobia and like, or even like a megaphone, no one would listen. Or maybe if the few people did, they'd be like, oh, that's sad. And they go away, and 2 minutes later, they'd be thinking about what to have for lunch or something. If you sit down and have a 20-minute conversation while you're doing someone's nails, holding hands, essentially, like eye to eye, person to person, holding hands, how can you not feel that person's humanity? How can you be left with like a feeling afterwards, like you're friends now, like you are bonded, like, and there's that emotional connection that you go away with that is so much more than like a statistic or something. Because when you are the statistic, like I am the statistic that I'm talking about in that brochure about transphobia, it's so much deeper. And that's what changes people, is when there's that deep connection, that emotional connection, that like it's so much more powerful than just like a statistic or like, I don't know, like a brochure. Yeah, so the nails are just a way of getting in, getting people. And do you mean when you offer a free manicure, there's a queue out the door? If I was offering brochures, there would be no, people would be ignoring me.
I just think it's so beautiful. I just think,
thank you.
Like, it's such an incredibly powerful form of connecting with people and activism.
Thank you, babe.
You also wrote a book, To My Trans Sisters, in 2017.
Yeah.
An inspirational collection of letters written by successful trans women.
Yeah. So it's basically the book that I wish I had when I started my transition. So like I said, trans people make up 1% of the population, which first of all is why I don't understand why there is so much talk about us in the media. I just can't get my head around that. There's, babe, focus on Brexit, focus on Corona, focus on racism. Like, there's so much, focus on sex, actual sexism. Like, the feminists who are spending all their time talking about us, I'm like, there's actual sexism that you could be like using your time to. Anyway, but going back to the book, most people haven't met a trans person, and that includes trans people, because we do make up such a small percent of the population. So when you transition, you haven't got anyone to like guide you through it. I didn't meet my first trans person until like 2 years into my transition. So I had no one to help me through the start and be like, it is so scary, especially as a trans woman, I think, because it intersects with like sexism as well. Like when you're going out presenting femme and or whatever, presenting as a woman or a girl, then you're hit with a sexism. So it's very scary. It's like a doubly scary thing almost. I wish I had a big sister figure to help me, not just with the kind of like small things like, oh, how to like, I don't know, cover your 5 o'clock shadow or like wear a wig so it doesn't look like a wig, but also the deeper things like how to deal when your family rejects you, how to deal with like dating as a trans woman, which is so hard, like how the deeper things as well. So it's like basically a collection of letters from about 100 women, trans women, from like politicians to scientists to sports people to celebrities, basically kind of sharing what they wish they could share of their self at the start of their transition. And then every letter comes with a biography that I wrote about the woman, because I wanted the book to kind of act as a way of kind of like immortalizing the kind of our culture, because mainstream is certainly not documenting like minority groups culture. Like we're kind of, once these people, because the people in the book aren't the Laverne Coxes of the community, they're not going to be remembered. Like, and actually one woman did die during the editing process. She was like 80, and I just feel so blessed that I got her letter in the book, because she's someone that like most, if you asked most trans people and even me before I was doing my book, you just wouldn't have heard about her. But she was like the first trans woman on like primetime American TV, and she wasn't out as trans at the time, and she got married 3 times and none of her husbands knew she was trans. Which I think is a gag, but also like no one in America obviously knew she was trans until like she came out just before she died. She wrote a memoir, she was kind of like, I think I get the impression from when I was talking to her over email, because she was in America and she was like 80 something, I think she was like a glamorous assistant type person on American TV, like a primetime TV show, like a The Price is Right sort of thing. That's the impression I got, but she's not well known. So like when she passed, like if I just feel very blessed that my book, not to be big-headed, but it's probably the biggest thing that she'll be kind of documented in, like, because she had this little, no offense girl if you're listening in heaven, but she had this really like shoddy little website that is very like dated and like that no one will find, but like, and she has a Wikipedia page, thank god, but like my book is a bit more mainstream, that people will hear about her and keep her story alive. And like I just think it's so important for marginalized groups to like just preserve our histories and the people who have paved the way for us to go forward and make our history. You know, I think it's so important to just document, don't forget the people who came before you, basically. I feel like just the same people get celebrated, and it's the same whether it's like on Trans Day Visibility, when every brand and magazine is celebrating people like Mia Munro and all the same people, but like the people who are like doing the same thing as us but getting no thanks for it, and they just like, Mia Munro still get, and everyone else in the media still gets shit. Like I even saw Laverne Cox got attacked. She did an Instagram live where she was attacked in New York, and it's like, you can't believe that Laverne Cox would be attacked. But trans people are trans people in the same way. She's a black person as well, so you're going to face racism whether you're a famous black person or not. In the same way, trans people, we're always going to get transphobia. But like the people who aren't celebrated in the media don't get any thanks for being trans. I was just like. And I, like going back to money as well, like I couldn't have done my second round of surgery where I got like my boobs done and stuff, and my hairline lowered, if it wasn't for a GoFundMe, because I'm still in debt. Until this year, I was still in debt from my first, I took a loan out for my first round of surgery, which I paid for all myself. And it's just like, how are you gonna, you know, like I just was like, so I basically now every month I do a post where trans people who have GoFundMes can post a bit about their story in the comments section, and then my followers can go through and read, and if there's one that resonates with them, they can go to that person's bio and drop a couple of quid into their GoFundMe.
I would love to quickly talk about your starring role in the Body Shop's self-love campaign. So I would love to hear about what self-love, self-care, and looking after yourself looks like to you and feels like to you.
Oh god, it's been a journey, and I talk about this a bit in the campaign, but it's hard as a trans person, because the whole point of being trans is that you don't like who you are. Like that's a non-negotiable, in that like obviously every trans person's transition is different, and we all need different levels of like affirming medication or surgery. So like some people take hormones, some people don't, some people want surgery, some people don't, some people want a lot of surgery, some people want every single, like in terms of like all the kind of like down bottom surgery, top surgery, like facials, like, so it's very different. But at the end of the day, the whole point in being a binary trans person is that you're uncomfortable in yourself and in your body, and you don't like your body. And there's the scientifically kind of medically diagnosable part of being trans is called gender dysphoria, which means you like have a physical discomfort, like it's almost like a nausea. I can't explain. It's kind of like it's been declassified as a mental illness. Like it's not a mental illness anymore, but for a long time it was seen as a mental illness because it's like a, you just feel physically sick at your physical body. So it's bizarre as a trans person to be talking about self-love when you come from a place of feeling physically sick at your own body. And it's mad like that. I think of the transformation I've gone through mentally rather than physically, and that like I've gone through, and don't get me wrong, I don't like my body now, if I'm totally honest. There's a lot I don't like about my body. I don't feel very confident, but I feel I love my body, and I'm very like, I might not be confident in my body, but I'm comfortable. Is that the right way around? Yeah, I'm comfortable in my body, and I'm very like, I feel very comfortable, and I feel like that's a 360 from who I was 7 years ago, where I was just like, I would cover mirrors in my house. Like I remember like I wouldn't have lights on. I'd ask like my family to like turn lights off. I would put towels over mirrors, cover mirrors with like posters and paper because I couldn't bear to see myself. So it was just like a real moment for life, in the words of Nikki, to like just be in a campaign about self-love. And especially as a trans girl, like I felt really proud. And we're talking about representation. Like it'd be nice for like kids walking around like West, because this isn't a brag, but kind of a brag, but like that, it's like it's a big campaign. Like I didn't realize how big it was until when it came out, and then they were like, oh, by the way, it's global. And I've had people tagging me on Instagram and like, I'm in, I don't know, Amsterdam, someone hi Phoebe, for listening, Phoebe, some one of my followers tagged me in Amsterdam, and I'm like, oh my god, like I didn't realize. I thought it was just like England, and like people were even like South Africa and stuff, and I'm like, bloody hell. Like, so the fact that like trans kids might be out like shopping with their moms, or even teenagers, or even an older trans person who maybe feels like they've missed a boat and like, oh, it's too late for me now, because they couldn't come out younger because it was a different time like in society, like maybe they'll see the campaign and be like, oh, it's so affirming to see yourself reflected in media. So that they might be just be like walking around Westfield or something, see little campaign with a trans girl, be like, oh my god, like I love if that. She can do it, I can do it.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's absolutely awesome. Quick fire with Charlie. Oh. Breakfast, lunch or dinner?
Dinner.
Tea or coffee?
Tea.
Pancakes or waffles?
Pancakes.
Loungewear?
Loungewear. I don't even need to hear that other one.
Dress up or dress down?
Dress up, actually.
Trainers or heels?
Heels.
Burgers or fries?
Fries.
Almond milk or oat milk?
Oat milk.
Twitter or Instagram?
Instagram, 100%.
Podcasts or Netflix?
Netflix, no offense, babe.
Everyone says Netflix. Yeah. Documentaries or movies?
Oh, movies. No offense to myself in that one.
Spontaneity or routine?
Spontaneity.
And early night or night owl?
Shall I say early bird, because it's a nice cycle, kind of full circle moment to end this. I was a night owl, and now I'm an early bird, thanks to you.
That was quick fire with Charlie.
That was terrifying.
I'm sorry.
I'm
it was
sweating.
For me
I'm
too.
Sweating.
It was for me as well, not having the questions in front of me.
No, that was really fun.
Final few questions. What is your one non-negotiable daily self-care habit?
Ooh, a bath, or like several. Yeah, pretty much. I'm a Pisces. I'm a water sign. I don't know why. I just feel very like at home in water. I don't know. That sounds really silly, but like I just find that if I need to like clear my head. Also, I have a nap every day. Like every single day, I have a nap. I have to have a nap. I don't know why. I can't get through a whole day without. Probably because I go bed at a disgusting time. But maybe once I fix my life because of this podcast, I won't need naps.
No.
But like if it's not a nap, I'll try and I don't know. I always feel better after a bath. Always feel better after a bath.
I love both those things. Naps and apparently are so good for you as well. Apparently.
Are they?
Yeah, apparently so.
Probably not when I take them. I take them at 9 p.m. I'm not even joking. I normally have a nap at about like 7:38 and wake up at about like 8:39, and I'm like, I should have just stayed asleep, and then I could wake up at like 6 a.m. and be productive.
Well, when you start going out again, this will be ideal timing. You have your little pre-disco.
That is a really good idea.
Go out and
I'm ready. Yeah.
You're ready. If you could advise listeners to do or try one small thing today to help them find joy, what would it be?
Oh, that is a good question. I guess the one thing I would say is to take my advice about your inner child, and like that applies to when you're being bad to yourself, but also when you want to be good to yourself. So it's a positive and negative affirming thing. When you're being bad to yourself, ask yourself, would you do this to your negative child, to your inner child? But then when you're thinking about how you should treat yourself, like ask yourself, what does your inner child deserve? Your inner child deserves good food, not like the McDonald's that I was feeding it like twice a day. Your inner child deserves 7 baths a fucking day if they want. Your inner child deserves to watch nice. You wouldn't make your inner child sit down and watch some depressing documentary, like my one coming out very soon on BBC BBC, you'd make them watch Schitt's Creek and be like, look at this lovely gay couple with their fabulous mum marrying them. That's what you would make your inner child watch. So just like, it's the inner child thing works both ways, in that when you're having a bad day or if you want to have a good day, you ask yourself, what would you do for your inner child?
I love it. And finally, what is one thing you hope your older self will have achieved?
Oh God, I just want to achieve staying alive, to be honest. Like, it's a bloody struggle sometimes, isn't it? It's like, it's been a hard life. But that will be the greatest achievement, because, like, not to be deep, but to end on a nice, it's a kind of a nice ending. But like, I was really in a dark place and didn't want to be here at the start of my transition. My transition came after a breakdown, which is, I would just like to remind people that transition is the last choice. Most of the people listening to this will be girls who are probably feminists themselves. There's so much talk in feminism about like trans women's place in it and stuff. And I just want you to understand, have some compassion. Like, this, no one would ever choose this life unless this is the last option. And like, I didn't want to be here before. And this was my last option. I can't believe the leaps and bounds I've come since like 7 years ago, where I had a breakdown. I was going to kill myself. I thought I'd transition and give it a shot. I'm still here 7 years on. Please God, I'll be here in another 7 years. Maybe in another seven. No, I'll be like 90. I can't even do the maths. Anyway.
In 70 years, you'll be here, babe. Hey, listen, thank you so much.
Hey, you listen.
No, thank you so much.
Seriously, thank you, babe.
I'm really, really grateful for you.
I'm grateful for you. Are you serious?
No. I honestly feel like very honoured and very blessed that you have used this time with me to speak so openly and compassionately. And like, you have no idea the impact you have. Like, I just think your work is so valuable and
thank you
are so valuable. So thank you so much.
Thank you so much, babe. I love you. Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode. If you enjoyed it, please do share it with a friend or over on your Instagram stories. And if you have a spare few seconds, please do leave it a 5-star review on iTunes. I am sad to say that this episode draws the first season of All the Small Things to a close. So do make sure you're subscribed for when we return, and you can follow the series on Instagram at ATST Podcast. Thank you so much for listening, and I'll catch you back here soon.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.